You said you were driving, so I'm imagining that you're powering through a wind tunnel or something. It sounds like you're inside the car from the Jetsons. My friend Rachel Kahn, we started a podcast after George Floyd, and she was extremely interested in the quality of her sound. They'd went to a big snooty college or whatever, and so they'd work really hard to get the best quality sound all the time. And so they were worried about like how good they would sound, and it ended up like they were recording from inside of a closet because they wanted to have like perfect production values. And I got together with my friends. We were on opposite sides of Atlanta during all of this stuff. And we were just cranking out episodes in our basement at very low production quality. And we found that just doing it at any rate got us really good results. And we let the social media algorithm do their best with us constantly giving it our ideas.
Uh-huh.
And yeah, we'd done that. We had a podcast and we did 150 episodes. And a lot of these people that we talked to were small business owners, or they ran nonprofits, and or they had like community organizations. They were like doing food pickups and stuff like that. And a lot of them talked about they could only talk to so many people in a day, or they've got like a small organization and there are four people who are being overworked because they know the system, or taking like highlights from events and putting them in a format where people could see it and interact with it. We started a business to talk to those people and help them find volunteers and donors. But we also said, we've been doing that for a little while, we should actually go back to podcasting and just actually having regular non-salesy conversations with people who are in the industry and are doing things that are interesting, that we thought, hey, we should keep a presence in this city and talk to these people. This is the show that we designed. The first invites that we sent out were actually to people in our business lives, because these are all the systems that we use in our real business. But really, we designed the show for our personal contacts and for our mentors and friends and staying in touch with them and stuff like that.
Cool.
So that brings me in touch with you guys, because we're doing sample episodes of this podcast with people who are in nonprofits and do things that are visually interesting, because we're a video production company. So we're looking for people that are doing visually interesting nonprofits and have like human stories to tell. A lot of our work is also with rare diseases. We work with a group called the Until There's a Cure Foundation. If you remember in the 90s, it's sad that we have to sometimes phrase it that way, but this was one of the first organizations. And in fact, they were the first to sell jewelry as an item for raising awareness for an illness.
Yeah.
And so we've been doing a lot of testimonial outreach, talking to people who have like personal one-on-one stories to share, and getting them to, in the same way that like somebody who did business coaching or something like that might do a testimonial, like just having people talk about the organizations that they work with, we find is really powerful for not just the social media end of things, but also for donors and like year-end summaries and stuff like that. So we're able to do it both ways in this kind of format. I'll send you, like, after our call, we've got a little package based on our work with Until that has audiograms. If you've ever watched podcast highlights, usually we would send this stuff to you. But like I said, my partner got the bug, and so we're scrambling a little bit. We usually send this, like, a couple of hours before you show up. But it's got show notes. It's got highlights from the discussion. It'll have our podcast logo and a couple of highlights from whatever you say. And if you want a version for yourself, we can easily make you your own that's got like Swim Brave and then whatever highlights we hit during our discussion. You know what I mean? And we'll do the, and when we launch this, like, it'll be noteworthy enough that you can share it on your Instagram, because it's like a relaunch of a semi D-list podcast, which means at least someone will look at it.
So is the goal then to, like, for next steps, would it be to actually join you guys one day for a podcast, and then from there you guys would just create things out of either pre-existing content that we have based on what our nonprofit does, and then content from the podcast to make the video?
You understand perfectly.
Okay.
For people...
Go ahead.
For people who are very skeptical, we say we can take a recording of our conversation now. And even with you calling in on your phone, again, going back to my ethic, and it seems like a counter sales ethic, because sometimes people say, I'll just find a way to do it by myself. But our product that we sell is high-end, so we freely tell people, just try to record video of you working, or of you at an event, or of you talking to someone. And we like to just take it and we look at the visual layer and the audio layer and just every part of it, and we try to figure out how can we take a really good moment from an event and break it down into a bunch of social media. Because I have done so many of these events, and I guess I'll ask you the same thing. I don't want to talk too much. I've done so many of these events, and they've got so many great moments, and we're all crying. And then afterwards, we're like, who had the camera? And nobody did. And I really encourage, and I get to do this kind of just for free, operationalize adding that media layer into whatever you're doing at any level that you're at. Because honestly, now more than ever, with social media is extremely screwed up just in terms of the stuff that's promoted on there. And it's good to have antidotes to that are like, leave your house, do something that connects with a real human being, something that improves the world around you, advocate for something in the political sphere, donate to something. You know what I mean? Just be active in your real life. As opposed to, it would be almost overly broad to talk about social media just making people mad. That feels like it's almost not specific enough. But when you really think about how much social media just makes people angry when they use it, and how much people use it all the time, I really think that, like, just over the next 10 years, people should be thinking about just that on an industrial scale. Like the level of just bad vibes in our social media, and just how we can make these into not just flashing images, but, and this is when I talk to people, like systems that keep track of people and nurture them over time, and keeping in touch with them through the email and the newsletter and this and that. All of that is not just something that you want to do, but a responsibility.
No, totally, I understand.
But you obviously have had lots of success doing social media. I really love all of the work that you make. It's all really engaging. You have a great idea. It's something that, honestly, we talk to. There's no smooth segue to, unfortunately, we talk to people with rare diseases all the time, and they struggle with, like, how to bring humanity to the work that they're doing without... You know what I mean?
Just trying to showcase it, like, in a light where people can connect with it.
Yeah.
Or...
That's what I mean. Without necessarily feeling so negative afterwards.
That totally makes sense. So I guess my questions for you would be, like, what would you need from me, and what would next steps be?
Talk to me. Quickly answer my questions about what are the main relationships that make Swim Brave work? How does Swim Brave work? How do you find donors, volunteers, clients, stuff like that?
Swim Brave is a nonprofit that advocates for water safety. So we utilize mermaid and merman mascots to educate families on proactive, productive tips that can keep them safer in and around the water. Most people don't know that drowning is the leading cause of death for kids 1 to 4, and it has been for decades. It's the second leading cause of accidental death for kids under 15, only surpassed by car accidents. And the only reason that's for unintentional death is because starting at age 10, suicide becomes the number one cause of death.
Yeah.
So with that, there's a lot of mental health resources. There's a lot of talk about, especially with gun violence, there's a lot of talk about mental health. Car accidents, almost every single major company in the world has some sort of click it and ticket campaign, don't drink and drive campaign, and no one talks about water safety. Most people have no idea that it's even an issue. So in order to get the word out there and to get people talking, we do outreach events and we focus on advocacy, just creating more advocates, getting people to open their eyes to the fact that this is a cause that needs attention, that together as a community that we can prevent drownings. Almost every single drowning is preventable. And for that reason, there's absolutely no reason why it's still a leading cause of death. No good reason, anyways. When we go out, we plant the seed in order to get people to ask the questions, and then from there, they start asking the right questions. Where can I get some lessons? What age could I start my kids in swim lessons? Do you happen to know a certain swim instructor that works with kids who are scared of the water, or who are autistic, or who are non-audible, neurodivergent of some sort? Parent education days, even educating parents, because it's not just learning to swim for the kids and getting them excited, because swimming is a life-saving skill first, before it's a sport, before it's a playtime activity, and it's the only sport that is also a life-saving skill. And so when we change that narrative for parents, they really start to think about it, and they're like, you're right. Like, I really only think of swimming when I'm about to go on vacation or when summer's approaching. But if we switch the narrative as a caretaker and say swimming is a life-saving skill first and foremost, now it changes the narrative in their head of maybe they should know how to swim before I take them on vacation. Maybe they should learn to float on their back and learn how to get out of the pool. Call for help if they need before I'm throwing them in a floaty and just tossing them in the river. These kinds of actions change the way that we look at water, so it changes the way that our families respect water. So now we're having more proactive conversations that lead to proactive actions, which leads to change. And so that's the whole goal behind Swim Brave, is to get the community to work together so that as a community, we can lower these drowning rates over time, because it's not government funded for a reason. It kills more black and brown babies than anything else. It's probably one of the most natural forms of process of elimination. Everyone loves to talk about how survival of the fittest.
You're completely
isn't really
right.
A thing anymore. And it really is. Survival of the fittest is still a thing. I know that we're not hunting and gathering anymore, but survival of the fittest is still very much
right.
Relevant in today's age. And it goes back to, did your ancestors have access to pools? Probably not in the era of segregation if you were black or brown. Did your ancestors have the access to afford swimming lessons? If you're mid-income or lower, probably not. Most swim lessons on average are like $60 a lesson per kid. You got multiple kids in one household. No one can afford that. Especially when you don't consider it a life-saving skill, you consider it a play activity. Why would you process that and make it a part of your budget when you think it's just some fun activity? So it's not just the narrative of how we educate on respecting the water, but it's also going back and acknowledging that there have been a lot of gaps in water safety and a lot of lack of education for certain niches of people. And because of that, we also have a very diverse team in aquatics. I would like to say that we're probably one of the most diverse.
I can also say that as somebody who I look at tons of pages of people who are doing nonprofit work. And you definitely are.
And I like to point it out because I feel like it's such a huge topic today, like diversity and inclusion, but no one actually wants to be about it. Everyone loves to talk about it. Everyone's always a seminar on it, but no one is actually doing it. From the person in the front of the room, if your entire team is black or if your entire team is white, you're probably not the best person to be speaking on diversity and inclusion. And that's on both scales. We all have to realize that it's not one side or the other. It's a collective effort. And that goes into water safety. It's a collective effort. I don't care what color someone's skin is or what their learning ability is. If I see them in the water needing help, I'm going to help. And that's just my general disposition. I know not everyone may be like that, but that's how I am. And so that's how my team is. We don't care where you come from. Some of the most affluent families have lost loved ones to drowning, and some of the most low-income neighborhoods lose people to drowning far too often. The water does not discriminate.
Yeah.
That's something water does not do. And so, yeah, we don't either, because everyone needs to be part of the conversation. Everyone needs to be part of the solution. Not everyone was part of the problem, but everyone can be part of the solution. And we do volunteers in a variety of ways. I have some volunteers that are, like I said, very affluent actors, professional mermaids, can afford a $5,000 silicone tail, can afford to go get lifeguard certified, diver certified. And I have volunteers that come from their local high school and could barely pass a swim test before they started volunteering with us. And I have everything in between. So volunteers, we don't really have a specific way of sourcing them. If I did, I probably wouldn't have such a diverse team. I really just, I open it up to anybody. And as long as you're willing to do the training, then you're welcome.
Most of your work is in person, right? Yeah.
For the outreach, yes. For the behind-the-scenes stuff, like our board, our graphics designers, our website people, even our makeup artists and things like that are usually not out and about. But the front-facing volunteers, all of the mermaids and all of our cause ambassadors is what we call them, like a brand ambassador for a big brand.
Yeah.
All our cause ambassadors and all of our mermaids. Yeah, I think right now all we have is mermaids. We don't have any mermen right now or mermaids right now. I'm sure you know this with nonprofits. Most people who volunteer, 80% of volunteers are usually female or identify as a woman. That's very true in our nonprofit too. We have men volunteers, and we have probably 2 mermen over the history of our company, but I think every day I probably get 5 new people who identify as female who ask about being a mermaid. And so that is something where I'm pretty honored in the sense that I get to work with a very diverse crew that actually cares, that actually gives back. But I also get to see these amazing, strong women who can lift 50 pounds underwater, perform rescues. We've had multiple of our mermaids get awarded for doing in-ocean rescues and in-pool rescues when even lifeguards that were present and on duty were distracted or were busy. And it's just one of those things where, you know, again, 100 years ago, not everyone had access to pools. And it wasn't just because of the color of your skin. It was also if you were just deemed property, which women were deemed property.
Yeah.
So to see these people who 100 years ago wouldn't have even been able to be in a pool, and now they're out here rescuing people, performing some of the hardest, most physical, enduring activities, because swimming, you use every single muscle in your body. It's a beautiful thing. I think that it's really empowering for the volunteers. So not only do they feel like they're doing good, and they connect with families, and they connect with children, which is a pretty magical part, to see these kids leave and say, "Mom, the mermaid said I need to be in swim lessons. How come you haven't put me in swim lessons?" Or they'll come back the next year and they'll be like, "Oh, where's Mermaid May?" And we're like, "Oh, she's not here this year. She had to stay in the ocean." And they'll be like, "No, I wanted to tell her that I'm at a guppy level now, or I'm at a shark level now. When I met her, I couldn't swim yet. Or when I met her, I was just a starfish." And they want to tell the mermaids how they've improved in their swim program and their swim lessons. So that part is really fulfilling. I hear from the team a lot. But for me, to see them so empowered and to see them so connected with water and nature and to empower others to be more comfortable and to be more respectful around the water, it's just a beautiful sign of strength that a lot of people didn't have the ability to show even just 100 years ago, a century in the same country. So yeah, our volunteers are crucial for what we do. They're a huge part of the public eye. And I think for them, the reason they volunteer is, one, the giving back part and the conversations that they get to have where they can see lives being molded. But on the flip side of that, it's amazing to see them grow as humans, just within their strength, within their power, within their knowledge. And it makes them feel like they're more powerful in a sense of drowning is scary. No one really wants to talk about it because it's not a fun topic. And it's a scary topic. And when you talk to parents initially, a lot of the phrases that we hear, "Oh my gosh, that's one of my biggest fears. I'm terrified. It's one of my biggest fears is losing my kids to drowning." And there's really something beautiful in getting knowledge and getting tools and getting steps and processes that are proactive to keep your friends and family safe and taking your power back and saying, "Yes, it is a scary topic, but I have things that I can do to make it less scary. I have tools. I have knowledge. I have the ability to be safer." And that empowerment is something I would never take away from anybody. That empowerment changes lives.
How does a person become a chapter leader at Swim Brave? How does a person deepen their commitment just inside? What are the steps that you have to take?
So every volunteer goes through an initial training, whether you're front-facing or not. Once you go through the Zoom training, it's a series of PDFs and a Zoom video training that goes and guides along the PDFs. Everyone does that. Once you do that, you have to volunteer at outreach events if you want to become a chapter manager. So you volunteer at outreach events as a cause ambassador first. Cause ambassadors are clothed, they usually wear a branded shirt, and they're typically the ones who are talking to the parents, the caretakers, and the conversations are usually generated more around the facts, the statistics, and then the proactive tools and tips that caretakers can do. Once they've volunteered as a cause ambassador and they feel comfortable, they move to the mermaid role. The mermaids are typically talking to the kids, and they're typically encouraging them things like mermaids never swim alone. Mermaids always swim in pods. Who's your pod? Do you have a swim buddy? And they get the kids thinking about that. They get the kids thinking about and being excited to take swim lessons. Similar conversation, but we approach it in a different manner. Once you've volunteered as a cause ambassador and you're comfortable, that could for some people be one event, for some people that could be five events. And then once you've volunteered as a mermaid and you are comfortable, that usually takes a little bit longer. It's usually two or more events before people feel really confident as a merperson. Once you've done all of those roles, then you have the ability to take on what we would call a chapter manager or a lead role. It means that, one, if anyone calls out, you can step into any role. And one, it means that you can train any position that's front-facing. And two, it means you're confident enough in talking about the cause that you could do it when I'm not there. And that's pretty much it.
There's,
as you're reliable and dedicated.
There's a lot of that I like because, number one, it builds your organization around. It guarantees that everybody that's in a high management position is good at being front-facing. If they are not having conversations with people at these places that are those really good and authentic experiences, then they just will end up doing something else. And I really think about that as it's a great way to establish an internal culture.
Yeah.
So what happens behind that front area? What is the day-to-day office work in a day at Swim Brave like? How many people does it take for Swim Brave to do what it does from day-to-day, week-to-week, month-to-month, etc.?
We are entirely volunteer-ran, which means that we need volume. At our highest, we've had about probably 350, 400 volunteers throughout the years. And because it's volunteer-based, we let everyone do it when it's fitting for their schedule and when it feels right for them, right? When they're not overwhelmed, when they're not overworked. And we might see people twice a year. And, of course, those people are probably not going to be leads or site managers, but if they want to come and mermaid twice a year, then that helps. Other people volunteer with me all the time. And the back-end work is never-ending. Fundraising is never-ending. So there's constantly emails and communication going out to keep us operational. And that's a lot of collaborations, a lot of partnerships, a lot of donors, sponsorships. So that all takes communication and a fundraising team, which is very much behind the scenes. We do slight fundraising at the events where there may be like a QR code for our donation links on the table, but we're not actively fundraising at the events, nor do we require people to pay for the pictures with the mermaids or to come up and play the game with the mermaids. So it's there as an option, but it's not a primary focus during outreach. So it has to be a primary focus on the back end. So there's fundraising and the people that help with that. And then we have press, which somewhat goes into fundraising, but it more goes into things like our articles, whether we've done Ram Parenting Magazine and articles on caretaking and water safety for caretakers, all the way to we've been on ABC News and we've done news segments showing people, one, how to self-rescue safely without putting themselves in danger. And then also giving people information on just general water safety tips for summer, spring preparation. The news likes to do that stuff a lot in May. And people help with that. So we have makeup artists. We have writers on the back end. We have, I do marketing for my muggle job. So I do media training. So we have people who go through media training if they're going to be public speaking on the news and stuff with us. And we have all of that, which is more of our marketing team. And then on the back end operations, I think that's probably more so the board. The board kind of helps with the general direction of okay, what do we spend the money on now? How is it best utilized? And which events, which partnerships make the most sense to invest in the most? And which ones are maybe not as prioritized, either because we're still training in that area and maybe we don't want to dump too much money too soon into some place that's just growing, where we have large chapters in, let's say, like Los Angeles, and we have full-fledged partnerships with the city, and the city's got over 50 pools. We know that we're welcome there and that the program is running there. Of course, we're going to allocate more funding to there and then figure out how. So strategic-wise, the board is a huge part of our strategy. And then besides that, I do a lot of stuff myself. A lot of planting the seeds for collaborations, figuring out how we can work with other nonprofits, especially in the safety injury prevention sector. So we do a lot with groups of neurodivergent families, because it's just not the same. The way that they approach, how do they call 911? How do they approach a police officer? How they learn to swim? How they talk about swim safety? Everything is different when you come from a family where, whether you have, you're a neurodivergent parent or you have neurodivergent children, special needs kids, or even differently abled. Those niches are not as focused on when it comes to public education and outreach, especially in injury prevention and safety sector. So while a lot of police forces and a lot of firefighters and a lot of lifeguards have these great programs that we're part of where they'll go into schools and they'll educate these kids, they're not really focusing on what if you're not audible? What if you know have some sort of limiting physical ability? What if you have some sort of learning ability that's different from other kids, where you're just as smart, but people are going to treat you differently because, one, maybe you don't make eye contact, or because you or maybe are a little bit more blunt than a lot of other children your age, things of that nature. We've come to notice that there's a lack of education for specific niches. So again, diversity and inclusion, it doesn't just mean the color of people's skin. It also means where they grew up, the cultures they come from, the history in that, and also their current health status. And there's a lot of planning on the back end of how do you customize and tailor your program for all those different sectors. Because when we go out, outreach is not, it's not something you can cookie cut. We go into one area and a mermaid can ask, do you like swimming? And every kid in that area is going to be like, yeah, we love swimming. We love the water. And other neighborhoods we go into and the mermaids ask if the kids like swimming, straight up, some of these kids are like, what's swimming?
Wow.
You can't educate them the same. So a lot of the operational back end is how do you tailor this program to customize different neighborhoods, different zip codes, different cultures, even in Africa. We've had chapters in Africa, and I'm like, oh, do you want me to mail you some mermaid costumes? And they were like, oh, no, we can't wear those here. We would 100% be considered part of the occult, and our swim program wouldn't be respected, and people would be scared to dress like a mermaid or to even approach one here. And I was like, really? And they were like, oh, yeah. They're like, we love the cause. We love the logo. We'll totally participate with you, but we don't need the mermaid costumes. Just send over your shirts and your water watcher tags and do that. And we'll do that. But in Ghana, no, we can't dress like a mermaid here. And I was like, huh, interesting.
How do you make that balance? Is it really you just really trust the local people? Does the board try to stretch its authority? Is there internecine infighting? What's the balance of power like between the people who often have to figure that out on a day-to-day basis and people who want to maintain the brand integrity or uniformity of the organization's experience? What's that like?
I am the owner, and I'm extremely open-minded. Two, I'm extremely mixed. Like, when people ask me what I am, I just say I'm a melting pot. If I tried to break it all down in a conversation,
yeah. It
just wouldn't make sense. I'm a mutt. My family is extremely diverse. My background is extremely diverse. Traveling and being a military brat made me grow up in extremely diverse areas on a regular basis. We moved every year or two.
You're saying that you have a better radar for cultural sensitivity than any company that's out there doing anything similar to this.
Everything I do is based around empowerment. I don't micromanage at all. And if I don't micromanage, it's not going to bug me if the program needs to be different in different areas to custom tailor to that community. That's one of the things. And it wasn't even intentional at first. It just happened because if you're authentic and you're in alignment, things are just going to happen the way they're meant to, is how I believe. So it's, we would go into a certain neighborhood.
I was going to say, it's funny that you use that exact phrasing, because I was going to ask you, do you feel like you've had a journey getting where you are, and of course everybody does, or do you feel like you are exactly at the place you're meant to be?
I think both. It's definitely been a journey. If you would have asked me, not 10 years ago, because my brother had already drowned 10 years ago, but if you asked me growing up and in my 20s, my early 20s, what I wanted to do with my life, owning a nonprofit was not on my radar. I would have never said that. But life happens, things change, your course changes. And so, yes, I do feel like I'm exactly where I'm meant to be, because even though it's not where I thought I was going to be, and it's not where I planned or intended to be growing up, I have seen more alignment in this project than I have in a lot of other aspects of my life. And that says a lot. And the other aspect of, besides being in alignment, just being an authentic person, that culture, that's why I'm so active in being a part of the organization. I did not want a corporate culture that was built around anyone else's energy. I didn't want a corporate culture that was built around inauthenticity. And I have to be willing to get my feet dirty and stay busy, so to speak. I have to be willing to go out there and be a front-facing team player volunteer with my volunteers. I don't even pay myself to run Swim Brave. I do it all volunteer as well. And I do the frontline work with the team when I can, when I have the time. I think being a team player and being true to yourself like that helps draw in more authentic humans around you. But then furthermore, I think that the timing and the placement within the universe just starts to work in your alignment. We would have a certain event in Compton, and I really wouldn't even be thinking about it. We'd be like in Compton, because sometimes we'll do multiple events in one day. So we'd be in like Compton, we'd be in East LA, we'd be in Newport Beach, and we would be like up in Carlsbad, or down in Carlsbad, which is closer to San Diego. And we'd have a few events going on, and I would get pictures back and comments back. I have the team track data, and I have them give me feedback from the events. And so sometimes it could be a quote from someone at the event. And it was our first event in Compton, I want to say. I think it was our first event. And I had ended up sending Niche. She's one of our black mermaids. Didn't really think much of it. I have a diverse team. I didn't think much of it. She went. She came back. She was like, all those families were black. And every little girl was so freaking excited to see a black mermaid. And every mom commented, okay, you guys got a black mermaid. Let me see you. And they felt more accepted. They felt more included. But not only that, they said the kids were so inspired because they wanted to swim like that mermaid. And a lot of them didn't even realize that if we had sent a mermaid that looked like Ariel, red hair and the Disney kind of vibe, which we have girls with red hair and they fit that persona, they would have had a blast. The kids still would have had fun. But that personal connection of making these kids feel not only included and accepted, but that they could empower themselves to do something bigger too, that they could become great, phenomenal swimmers, that they could possibly to themselves be a mermaid one day and help save lives, just to take that power back. And especially when you see it come from like a 4, 5, 6-year-old, and they're just, it's a natural instinct. They don't even realize that they're connecting personally on that level. They really are just excited at their core. But when you look back and you look at the scenario and you say, wow, you were probably able to create such amazing personal connections that day because they felt so honored to even just be in the presence of a black mermaid because they had never seen one before. And I didn't even think of that. Like before, I just thought, we have a diverse team. Let's just send, I want our best mermaids out there this weekend. It's a busy weekend. And I could sit there and I could lie and be like, oh, I strategically planned that. I didn't. I placed people in certain areas and it was in alignment with what was going to happen that day and who was going to show up that day. And I never know who's going to show up to an event, really. People say they're coming, people buy tickets, but at the end of the day, there's always people we don't know. There's always situations and occurrences that happen that we couldn't have planned for. And that's another scenario of why would I try to sit there and control things and be like, I want this mermaid at this place and I want you to do this and say this and act this way and have this out. And I mean, don't get me wrong. Yeah, we have tablecloths with our logo. Like, yes, our handing out material has our brand, a branding on it. That is also important. But if I micromanaged more than I do, I would not allow the universe and my volunteers the ability to thrive the way that it does. So I'm just not a micromanager in that sense, because too often I've seen things just happen so beautifully.
And you are, when you're not doing Swim Brave, you also do experience-based and event-based marketing. This is like a drawn-out version of that. It's taking a moment and letting it happen in an authentic way.
A lot of what we do, the whole program, I would say, is based around my experience in marketing and outreach. I've been doing experiential marketing since I was a kid. I was actually put into modeling when I was really young, and I got a promotional modeling gig at like 3, 4 with the Power Rangers. And I've been in it ever since.
I almost have to interrupt, because my good friend, who is the chief technology person inside of our organization, is a huge Power Rangers fan, had a podcast on the Power Rangers that ran. I never listened to this thing, but I hear it was very good, and it ran for many episodes. What a cool synchronicity there.
Interesting time in life, but it definitely plays a role in the thing that I've learned, the sure. profession that I ended up going in, and taking all of that knowledge that these Fortune 500 companies and the largest brands in the world are focused on experiential marketing and outreach as a way to connect with their end consumer. Why not do it for a cause, like for something important? And how the program started.
What are the tools that you use to keep track of people? Because it seems to me like this builds so many relationships. How do you keep them all on in your head? Do you use a spreadsheet? Are you a natural talent? Do you have an app or tool that you like to use with people?
Social media is probably the apps that I would use. I'm not a tech app person. If you tell me I have to download another app to communicate or do a meeting, I'm probably not going to do it. I don't think it needs to be 18 apps on a phone to do the same thing that an email or a call could do. I'm not an app person at my core. I know they work for other people, but having the apps I already use, like a Facebook or a social media, and having people on there, that is a really great reminder of, oh, wow, this organization is doing this event, or, oh, wow, this police station has this award ceremony coming up, or just little things like that. It is nice. It's a nice visual tool and a visual reminder. Spreadsheets, no, I have them for like donors and things of that nature, but for like connections and collaborations, I think that's one of those things where if you force something, even a collaboration, past its like point of validity, you can make things worse, partnerships, collaborations, by outliving the lifetime that it needed to have within those orgs. So if another nonprofit disappears for a while, I'm not going to bug them. Oh, are you still doing events? Do you want to collab? They might be dealing with their own stuff. They might be digging deep into fundraising. They might be dissolving, and a lot of nonprofits close, and they might not even be around in a couple of years. And so when I notice that companies or partnerships are separating, I take that as part of the alignment of my energy is meant to be focused on this new partnership or on this other partnership, and that's where I focus the energy. I'm really not big on forcing relationships. I've noticed that when I do, that's the people who want to be paid for like their good work. I don't even pay myself for my good work, so I'm certainly not going to respect anybody who's demanding money to do good, you know? Really famous people. Like, I have great outreach. I could put the word out for you. You start to force this kind of relationship. And then maybe they say something that triggers. And now your brand is dragged down with all of this connection to that particular influencer. And this is just stuff that I've seen through my clients in marketing. When you outlive relationships that are no longer serving you, even in business, it starts to slow you down. So sometimes it's not about the sheer volume of volunteers or the sheer volume of your connections. It's quality, not quantity for me.
I know what you mean.
Something that you learn along the way. Not that they serve you when they are around, and then when things are no longer in alignment, you've got to let it go. And if it's meant to circle back, it will. Some partnerships and supporters and collaborations, like I said, I might only see them like twice a year. But when we align, it's a beautiful thing. That's what was meant to happen. And if I have that expectation on that person or that organization or that entity to be there as dedicated and committed as I am, one, that's just not possible. This is my mission, right? This is my life's mission that's been made clear to me. Two, it now starts to form these feelings of animosity almost, where you start to resent other people for not doing what you think they should be doing or not doing as much as you. And again, if that's not their place in life, if that's not their mission in life, it's great that they want to help, but you can't hold people to these expectations and standards that even that you would hold yourself to sometimes. And while I do have standards, of course, you have to go through certain training and you have to hit certain marks to be able to do certain roles within volunteering in our organization. I think at the same token, if, you know, if someone tells me I have to take a step back for my mental health or work is just too busy or whatever the case may be, how can I hold that above their head? They're lifing just like the rest of us, you know?
You've been well organized enough that you're able to, like, there's a little bit more of a support structure for when people come in, whether that's the call, they have a visual support structure. Whether it's the PDF, they have a visual support structure. They have something that they can read. There's enough going on when someone signs on with you guys that it's hard to get overwhelmed just all in one spot. And it's because of that kind of three-dimensional, which is what I like to call it because I did video training professionally for people for a while. That three-dimensional training, there are some people, and this is reflects on your point about neurodivergence. There are some people who will only watch your message, and there are some people who will only read your message, and there are some people who will only see your message because their brain is balanced in one direction or another.
Totally.
So it's...
Go ahead.
Yeah, no, that's why...
It's also a good point to say, like, why social media is so important to have a variety of tools and types of posts, because not everyone will watch a full video. Some people can't turn their volume up at work. You know, some people need the text to read, right? So yeah, it's a good point to say that there is people digest things differently, which is why you need different modalities of outreach.
What are your big goals for the next 6 months through the holiday season into spring? Are y'all doing like a big winter event? Are you changing house internally? What's going on?
So this is the first year that we're still operating at full speed, even into the fall. Typically, we will do fall events, but it's usually one or two more Halloween festivals, the Halloween-type fairs or the fall festivals and fall carnivals that happen. We would usually end up at one or two of those. And then in November, we work with a lot of transitional homes, which are, think like a homeless shelter, but for families, and they're assisting them in getting back on their feet. So the transitional homes will have a preschool on site to keep the kids in school. They have HR, someone on site to help with resumes for the parents and getting the parents interviews and jobs, and the daycare can watch the kids while the families go out and try to get back on their feet. And so a lot of these transitional homes will do things around the holidays, like Make-A-Wish Foundation, where maybe they'll do a Polynesian family style dinner and they'll ask us to come out with the mermaids, or they'll do a meet and greet with mermaids in one of the children's hospitals and they'll ask us to come through. Typically the fall and the winter was those events. And while they're very fulfilling and amazing, it was usually just a small handful. This is the first year, especially since COVID, where events really took off again. And even more, it's the first year where we have a full schedule of events already scheduled through November. We have events every single weekend. We're helping the Orange County Drowning Prevention Coalition with a very large 5K water safety fundraiser for the whole county to raise funds for families in need that could not normally afford swim lessons. And so that's another really big event that we're sponsoring in addition to our other small outreach events where we're going to be at the Santa Ana local pools. We're doing stuff down in San Diego with the Plunge. It's a really large pool facility on the ocean in San Diego. They have a floating pumpkin patch that they do, and they asked us to come down this year, and a few other things. So we are still jamming, just like we were in the spring and the summer. We have not slowed down quite yet this year.
I think that that's true.
It's, what is it, like the drawing in, like when you're in alignment and then the right people see your thing, they'll be called to reach out to you. I could see that for sure. And I think it's interesting that you work with such a diverse background of like groups and organizations. I have one of my best friends from high school is actually a teacher, and her husband's a corrections officer. And so they needed a teacher at the facility for people who were about to get out. They needed to read, write, be able to assimilate, go get jobs, make a resume. And so that was her first teaching job, actually, was getting them to even want to write something and then to try to inspire them to do it, right? Because some of them are like, fuck this, I'm just going to come right back in. In order to actually get them to want to write, she would ask that, like, it could be an autobiography, it could be a fucking superhero book, it could be anything you want, but like, you could live in an ideal world, like in an ideal situation, what would it be? And some of the stuff that they came up with, she would call me and just be like, I cried when I read this person's thing, because some of them are in there because of like shitty upbringings, and they had this whole story written about like superhero parents and how every parent would be like, when these are grown-ass men and they're getting shit off of their chest from decades ago. So I think it's so cool that you're in stuff like that too. I'm just props to you for helping a multitude of organizations. And I appreciate you guys even reaching out in the first place. And yeah, I'm always good for first steps. And then once that happens, we can take it from there.
So hey, thanks. I'm gonna let you go back to your life before this alert hits my phone.
Sounds good. Enjoy the rest of your day, all right?
You too.